Hey, everybody. We've got Scott Perry with Creative on Purpose, a community that helps you achieve your life and business priorities more efficiently and effectively. We dive into the difference between learning versus applied knowledge, where too many entrepreneurs get stuck, and how he's not your accountability coach. Check it out. Welcome back to the show. I'm Brandon Straza, and I believe that life gives to the giver. And today we have got Scott Perry of Creative on Purpose to help you lead with the give. Scott, welcome to the show, man.
Great to be here with you, Brandon. Really appreciate the opportunity to share some time with you.
Absolutely. And obviously the listeners, as opposed to waiting to the end of the show for our members, where's the best place to connect with you outside of the give that we'll tease at the end of the podcast?
I would say creativeonpurpose.com is the place where you can learn more about me and what I do. And there's all sorts of links that will get you to my Substack publication, which is really the best place to get some free insight and inspiration that about the things that we're going to be talking about here today.
I appreciate you sharing that with everyone. So head on over to his site. And then also at the end of this episode, we'll be talking about a little bit of a tease on what your give is and how they can connect and work with you more. So, let's just dive into it. Our ability to learn, or availability, I should say, of information has really changed over the last 2 to 3 years. In our younger years, it was textbooks and teachers, friends and family. Beyond the Googles, the YouTubes, and the other search engines, how has your learning changed from your early years versus today?
Oh, that is a really interesting question. One of the things that I think I definitely have spent a lot of time thinking about and trying to engineer for the people that follow me and read my books and my blog and tune into my broadcast and podcast is distinguishing that the difference between knowledge gathering and actual learning. We went to school, which is just a knowledge distribution network. Teachers drip out information. If you decide to go on to college, then they drip out some more information. But it's information that does not lead to action is kind of useless. And so I really think about knowledge as being, and this is something I picked up from being a part of the Guardian Academy, is knowledge is applied, or I'm sorry, learning is applied knowledge. So it means that you're changing your behavior by putting into real life the things that you know, the information that you have, and that if you do that, if you're testing your knowledge in the wild, by letting it collide with reality, you will learn things. You will learn things from your mistakes, from your failures, and from the occasional successes. And that will, over time, not just make you more intelligent, but it will also boost your wisdom, change your behavior, build your skill, and help you become the kind of person or that you seek to become in the world. So I think I really like to play around now, where before I was just a voracious learner by taking courses and working with teachers, and reading books and so forth. Where now I'm much more interested in kind of situations where you get to workshop knowledge. And so I do that in my own community and in the communities that I join, where I'm trying to get closer to the things I want in life by not just learning the information, but applying it in real life so that I can build a skill.
Is there an example that you've seen with the communities that you just discussed that you saw that you went from learning to knowing to living, like actually the implementation? So learning, knowing, living, that you saw that you kind of had it in a reverse order, and you're like, it was kind of that light bulb moment. And what was that experience like, and what did that mean to you?
I'll give two examples. One is When I really started to think about things this way was when I was a head coach in Seth Godin's Akimbo Workshop. So I was under contract with Seth for 5 years. And one of the things that I noticed was I think Seth is brilliant at packaging his knowledge into communities of learning that try to encourage people to apply that knowledge in whatever endeavor they're trying to excel in. And what I noticed as a head coach in those programs is that oftentimes people would complete a workshop like the marketing seminar or the freelancers workshop or the creatives workshop, which I was head coach for. And immediately after they finished the course, they would say, "Well, which course should I take next?" And I would always say, "Well, have you actually taken what you learned in this course and started to apply it to your work?" And oftentimes the answer was no. And it revealed to me that this idea of just knowledge gathering, information gathering, is a really seductive way to hide from doing anything meaningful, from getting anything meaningful done, because it feels like work. Like taking a course feels like you're doing something worthwhile. It feels like the change has actually happened just because you know something. And then, moving into my second example with the Guardian Academy, this is where I really started to put some additional language around this idea of keeping open loops, not just trying to feed your confirmation bias. I know what I know because I know what I believe, but what I believe because I believe it. But instead, opening loops and being open to different perspectives, new information, and also this idea of testing it in the wild to see if it will stand up to colliding with reality. And that really helped solidify in my mind this approach of, in my work with clients, getting them to commit to doing the work, which means learning the thing, but also doing the thing, and holding themselves accountable instead of what we normally do, which is, oh, I'm gonna take a course, I'm gonna hire a coach, I'm gonna join a mastermind because I need accountability. I need someone to hold me accountable. And that's just a really, when you really think about it, it's kind of inane and insane. I can hold my grandson. I can hold the door open for you, but I can't hold your accountability because accountability is I take responsibility for the consequences of my decisions and my actions. And so this idea that you're hiring, I make fun of accountability coaches because people are paying you for something that you can't actually do. Because unless someone holds themselves accountable, there's no accountability. Which, keeps a lot of gurus and mediocre coaches in business, because if they're holding you accountable and you're never holding yourself accountable, well, they have a job for life until you decide that you're going to actually take the responsibility of committing to holding yourself accountable.
Yeah, I can't imagine just knowing that you're constantly babysitting in that domain. And I'm not saying for every accountability coach out there by any means, but like holding someone in baby, like sooner or later, it's just like you want to see them flourish and grow. But where they're coming from, that's a whole other story, and how you see it. And I mean, that kind of is great into the next thing I want to talk to you about. As entrepreneurs, it's easy to lose our footing, lose our confidence. And, second guess the decisions we're making along the way. How have you developed a winning mindset? And what are some of the techniques or practices you use to overcome self-doubt or limiting beliefs?
Well, that's another great question. Well, so I'm going to reveal what a complete weirdo and nerd I am. I studied Latin in high school for 4 straight years, and every single one of those years, I won the Latin prize.
One
And
of the smartest people I know and dearest friends happens to be a family member of mine, also did Latin for 4 years. And it's like, it's a dead language, but I get it.
Well, it actually. The thing that about studying Latin is it really helps you understand the English language and all Romance languages much better, definitely help boost my English SAT score. So, but the etymology of the word. So I want to talk a little bit about decision making, because I think that's at the heart of what your question is really asking. Because if you are a difference maker, if you're a purpose-driven person trying to bring your unique vision into the world, or trying to, or using your experience and your knowledge and skill to help other people make the difference that they want to make in the world, difference makers have to be decision makers. And what I think you're speaking to is oftentimes entrepreneurs and any kind of purpose-driven person get stuck around making the right decision, quote unquote, or the perfect decision, or the best decision. The thing that I learned from working with Seth Godin, but also being able to hang out with some of his friends like Annie Duke, who talks quite a bit about and has written several books on decision making, is that decisions are not outcomes. The etymology of decision is de cidere or de cadere. And what that means is de is a prefix meaning off, and cadere means kill. And so a decision literally means you are killing off future possibilities. So when you decide something, not only you're making a decision about what you're going to do next, you're also killing an infinite number of possibilities of what you could have done. And all so strategically, what you have to do is learn how to make decisions, make the best decision you can in a moment, and make sure that you're not making a decision that has an asymmetrical amount of risk to the adverse in it. In other words, we talk about microstepping in the Guardian Academy. It's a concept that I used to call smallest viable step. So when you're making decisions, the way that I approach this and the way that I teach it to the clients I work with and the members of my community is, if you know what vision you're trying to bring into reality, if you know what your goal is, and you should, and you know where you're actually starting from, and you should, because the only way to close the gap between where you are and where you want to be in less time, with less risk, and with less effort is to set up that vector. Where am I starting? Where do I want to end up? And then you can navigate the challenges in between and make decisions about how you're going to get there. And to do that, I use a three-step process called notice, name, navigate. You have to notice what's going on. You have to name what's going on without any adverbs or adjectives, descriptive language, or value judgments. And then you have to define the choices that you have and choose and execute the one that will help you close the gap in less time, with less effort, with less risk. And if you repeat that process over and over and over again, what you end up doing is wayfinding your way into the possibility that you imagine without risking blowing yourself up through these incremental micro steps that compound over time. Because as you make decision after decision and execute on those decisions, you are collecting data and experience that allows you to clarify and refine your destination, your strategy for getting there, and the tactical steps that you're taking every single day to get there. So I am a person that believes that your bias should be toward action. It's always, I think, better to do something than to do nothing if you have an end in mind. But obviously making just terrible decisions or bad decisions or decisions that are made as like knee-jerk reactions based on emotion, which is how we're kind of programmed to make decisions. But if you notice what's going on and you name it without the adjectives and adverbs, you're stripping away all that narrative and you're deprogramming yourself against the confirmation bias and that sort of thing. And if you just plainly name the situation and what your choices are and can make a clear-eyed decision about what appears to be the best way forward, then you simply decide to do that. You do that, and now you're in the next position to rinse and repeat that process and get closer to what you want.
Yeah, so I mean, it's not naming the puppy, along the
Right.
way. And then, to all of our listeners that are IHOP fans, International House of Pancakes out there, think of this. It's 2 a.m. and you want to get to IHOP and you plug in, I'm going to IHOP, but at no point does that Google map know where you are. So how are you going to get to where you want to go when you don't know where you're currently at? Not going to get the syrup. Maybe not the best analogy, but I like it anyways. Remaining nimble and being able to adapt quickly, I believe is a key to success. What are the tools that you use to work through change, uncertainty, or disruption as it's all happening in real time? Because so often we have this, like, we don't see it coming, and then it hits, and it's like, whoa. There's a little bit of uncertainty, but how do you work through that in real time?
That's a great question. I just really want to quickly reflect on what you just said because I think it's brilliant. It's worth highlighting. You have to know where you're starting from and where you want to go. You also have to understand that as you are moving from where you are to where you want to be, that you can't know what opportunities and obstacles lay ahead, which is why navigating with Google Maps is so much better than the way we used to with MapQuest, because whether it was an old roadmap or printing out instructions on MapQuest, it just gave you a step-by-step process for getting somewhere. But if a tree went down across the road, or there was heavy traffic, or the place that you were going to burnt to the ground, you didn't. Like you just kept going. If the bridge was out, you just kept driving. So Google Maps allows you to course correct and navigate around through and past obstacles and take advantage of opportunities that will help you get there faster. So I think, honestly, Brandon, the people that I work with are often actually much more clear about where they want to go than where they actually are. And I think that's just boils down to, again, to reference my nerdy affection for Hellenistic philosophy. Above the Oracle of Delphi, the first of the three proclamations is know thyself. This exhortation, know thyself. And I think that most of us don't pay enough attention to that maxim, and we don't spend enough time actually knowing who we are. And to just weave it into your point, like making these decisions in real time. Well, number one, we have to understand that the only time that we can actually make a difference and the only time that we can actually make a decision is in the here and now. And so for me, I have this phrase that I share with clients: choose your story, choose your future. We're creatures that make sense of ourselves, each other, and our situation through narrative. I'm telling myself a story about who I am that's probably got a lot of negativity built into it based on, just my upbringing and the way I think about myself compared to the people that I aspire to be more like, and based on the stories that I hear from people that maybe don't really care that much about me, but have an opinion and so forth. Anyway, the point is the stories that we tell ourselves are often not completely true. They're certainly not very objective. And so if I'm telling myself a story that's got a lot of regret and shame based on past mistakes, past failed decisions, and past experiences that, have created some sort of harmful dialogue in my head, that's not going to be very helpful. And if I'm in the future, clinging to an expectation or an aspiration I have, I'm only causing myself unnecessary suffering, because the only time I can do anything, make any change happen, is in the here and now. And if I'm able to let go of my inner dialogue about regret and shame about things that have happened in the past, and fear and anxiety about things that might happen in the future, I'm actually able to just work on the problem instead of letting a problem continue to work on me. And so I think that the biggest force amplifiers in any entrepreneur's toolkit, or any person that aspires to get clearer and closer to what they want in life, is to pay attention to what is happening in the here and now, and to have and to mindfully and objectively and strategically think about who they are, where they are, where they want to be, what appears to be in the way, and how to best navigate into the just again, just navigate your way into the next step. Because if you do that, you'll be a step closer. And you can then start to think about how you navigate your way into the next step and the next step. And micro steps compound over time. They help close the gap. That old adage, slow is smooth and smooth is fast. That's how meaningful things get done. And that's how you actually get, you create more joy and fulfillment in the process. The process is the shortcut, as our mutual friend likes to say.
Yeah, you know, that reminds me of what you just went over there. There's a book I was gifted years ago from Steve Sims, from Ben Hardy, Personality Isn't Permanent. And that kind of started getting me going down the road of understanding our past, present, and future, and how our past emotions, actions are still impacting our present because we're allowing that emotion, that decision to actually, you know, we're coming from a biased position. And how we can rewrite our past to change our present and impact our future as if it's already happened. And that's really important there, especially in the entrepreneurial space. But I don't want to just like tout the entrepreneurial space. I'm talking in any space, any domain. At the end of the day, if we can come at it and not allow these past decisions, I'm not going to say it and sit there and say that they aren't important, but it doesn't mean that one is like the other and how we're going to, you know, continue through that same loop right there. No, that was great. I appreciate you sharing that with us, because again, Ben's an amazing author, and you know, have moved on from some books in there that you and I have shared before. But check it out if that's something with what Scott's saying right there. Scott also has some books out there, but Personality Isn't Permanent is a good read, pretty fast read right there. You know, when someone invests in their future, they have a better than vague idea of what they're going to get. We're able to have some form of expectation of the type of people that, you know, that are going to be in the room and what the outcome could be. What should people expect when they enter your reality?
Yeah, interesting. Well, again, just want to reflect on what you said a minute ago around just like, if you let a bad decision or a bad outcome from a past decision keep you stuck or humble and hiding, all you're doing is letting a bad decision or a decision that didn't work out burn you twice. So, you know, decision makers, difference makers make decisions, and decision makers make decisions. So just want to highlight the value of just continuing to lean into the decision making. What can people expect if they're going to enter my world is, number one, just to circle back to what we were saying earlier, I am not your accountability coach. Like, you should not come to me unless you are ready to hold yourself accountable and commit to doing the work necessary to close the gap between where you are and where you want to be. I help people that are solopreneurs and people that are freelancers and coaches and creatives. I can help a wide variety of people achieve a wide variety of goals, because it's all based on three basic ideas. I focus on first principles thinking, or reasoning from first principles. I think they're just always going to be just a very few. I usually boil it down to no more than three fundamental things that need to happen for you to get from where you are to where you want to be. And we just focus on those things, which means that we have to prune a lot of the things that you're currently doing that aren't helping you. And so we tend, entrepreneurs in particular, but creatives, coaches, we all take on way too many things because we're paying attention to what other people in the space are doing and what all the, you know, the gurus and the influencers are telling us we need to do. And it actually doesn't take that much. Like if you're an entrepreneur, what you need is an irresistible offer, an eager audience, and a strategy, a sales strategy that puts that offer in front of that audience. Just get those three things right. Now it sounds simple because it is simple, but simple isn't easy.
List those three things just in order. If you, you know, first principles thing, give us those three pieces right there, the basic ideas.
First principles thinking is just what are the necessary things to get the result that you want. And in the business world, whether you're a coach or an entrepreneur or freelancers, irresistible offer, eager audience, and a sales success strategy. And when I say irresistible offer, eager audience, and success strategy, I mean irresistible enough to get going, eager enough to test, and successful enough to sustain your ability to stay in business and keep going. Because what happens is now you're into the second piece, which is system reliability. This is the second fundamental principle that I work from. Every system is perfectly designed to get the result that it gets. If you have a crappy system, you will get crappy results. If you have an efficient and effective system built on the essential components necessary, you will expedite getting the results that you want to get. And so when, if we distill your process down to the three things that are necessary in order for you to achieve the result that you want to get, once we get those things dialed in enough to start to get you some traction, then we can raise the floor on the least efficient components so that we can start to build momentum and catalyze your progress towards what you want in business or life. And I say raise the floor because our instinct is to push on the ceiling. We think, okay, so I've got these three things. This third one is what I'm best at. I'll just keep pushing on that. And I get the idea of playing to your strengths. However, there's a law of diminishing returns. If you have an offer, just for the sake of argument, that's 50% reliable, and your sales strategy is, let's say, for the sake of argument, 80% reliable, pushing from 80% to 90% requires a lot more time and effort. Going from 50 to 60% requires much less time and effort, and it actually delivers a bigger result to your overall efficiency, because system reliability is based on the idea that it's not additive, it's multiplicative. And that's where people get tripped up. Coaches in particular are notorious for this. If I just had that one missing piece, if I just had that silver bullet, if I could just learn that secret formula, or if I could just access that blueprint, that's the thing that will get me. And so they add another tactic to their system. You know, so I had to have a logo, then I had to have a website, then I had to have an opt-in, then I had to have a email sequence. Now I'm going to do a webinar, and maybe I need to have an Instagram strategy and a YouTube channel. If you keep adding these things to your system, you created a full-time job doing a bunch of stuff that has nothing to do with what you really want to do with your life, which is change people's lives for the better. Because all that marketing and sales stuff, that's not what most coaches that I know, they don't want to spend their time doing that. They want to spend time with cool people making worthwhile change happen. So rather than continue to add things to your strategy, what you need to do is take away everything that's not necessary, and then optimize whatever things are necessary that are not operating at an adequate level of efficiency. Because if you boost those, you'll close the gap between where you are and where you want to be in a lot less time, with a lot less effort, with a lot less risk. And the third piece, so first principles thinking, or reasoning from first principles, system reliability, system thinking. And then the third piece is this idea of micro stepping. taking, you know, committing to a daily discipline of small steps that reduce risk, get you or keep you moving towards your goal, and learning to do those, earning the confidence and the skill and the experience that makes those things more effortless. If you commit to that daily discipline of small steps, stick to your strategy, your system, your process, and you maintain your focus on the first principles, success becomes almost inevitable.
Yeah, and one person's definition of success doesn't mean it's the other person's definition of success. And when you know, when I was listening to you talk about system reliability, I'm definitely a big fan of understanding that. And sometimes it does get in our way. But I want to, you know, just a kind of a clear-cut example is, let's say you walk into a room and you turn on a light and it only turns on 90% of the time. Well, after, you know, and you add a component, and now it only still turns on at 90% of the time. And then you add one more component. So we've added three components. Each one is only working at a 90% variable of like turning on that light switch. Would you be very happy? Probably not. But here's the thing. It's not running at 90%. It's running just at just below 73% on there. Take the 0.9 times 0.9 times 0.9, and you'll get really where it's working. And so the more complexity, the more, and it doesn't have to be complex. That's not what I'm hearing you're saying. It's not about, you know, but adding another piece is the complexity. It doesn't mean that, you know, showing up on YouTube or Facebook or somewhere else is complex. It's adding that piece and adding that piece. I just was in Georgia last week, and two parties, two companies were working in the same direction, but individually. We came together. We're like, what if we just put this together? We had no egos in play. And we're still doing the same thing, and we're figuring out the other pieces as it happens, as opposed to saying, well, first we need to get the attorneys involved, and then we need to get, we're just like, let's keep moving forward. And this is the, you know, it's back to the handshake days. And that was actually, you know, action organizes. We took action, and now we're organizing on what that next step. And that's not my saying, but a dear friend of mine, Dr. Jeff Spencer, talks about how action organizes. All right, so we've got a few questions as we're coming towards the end here, Scott. You know, there's always new ideas brewing in times of prosperity. But I believe that creativity and ingenuity come out of times when we feel the squeeze. What are you working on right now that will take place over the next 12 months that excites you?
Oh, wow. I'm always, you know, there's always things that are kind of bubbling on the back burner. I do not lack for coming up with ideas and ingenious ways that I could actually get in my own way and spread myself too thin. So a lot of, for me, a lot of it is, you know, the main thing is to keep the main thing kind of idea. So right now, I am really, and you and I have spoken about this. I've been a leader on the Success Founder platform for a little over a year and am excited to actually, rather than create a bunch of new things, I've been doing this for almost a decade in terms of my blogging and my book writing and my broadcasting and coaching. I have a ton of content, and I have not leveraged any of it in as fully as I should and could, because when you continue to iterate and innovate the ideas that you already have, you're actually refining them and create it. It's a force amplifier for making good work, better work, good ideas, better ideas, good products and services, better products and services. So I would say that for me, 2024 is definitely the year that I have decided I am going to, and I would never say never, in terms of, you know, I try not to not make promises that I may or may not have to retract in the future, near or far. But I have a ton of stuff out there already. So 2024 for me is the year where I'm going to really iterate and refine and improve the things that I already have so that I can connect with more of the right people and help them more efficiently and effectively make the changes that they want to make in their lives. And I think, you know, the Success Finder platform and the community I'm building there will have a big impact on that. And that the courses that I have there and the courses that I'll be putting there are just going to be iterations and refinements of things that I've done in the past that I already know work, but I want to make them work better. And so that the people that collide with them can better execute the things that they need to do to make the change that they want to make in their lives or business.
Yeah, and I love the work that you're doing. You get to do over at TSF, but just the people, because I've been able to interact with some of the people in some of your calls, and they're truly givers. They've got deep souls, and they care about the person in arms next to them. You know, I believe that leading with the give mentality, like that's the principle in which I've based every company partnership, and uncoincidentally, it's the name of the podcast, The Give. We ask that every guest on this podcast share a little sneak peek of what their give will be for our listeners placed over at TSF. Scott, what have you brought for us today to give to the listeners?
One of the projects that I worked on last year that I actually got some help from our mutual friend Jeff Moore on is this very short handbook called The Art of Encore Living. A lot of folks, as they are nearing the end of their career or their tour of duty as parents, or maybe even younger people who just don't want to play the game of life that was designed and sold to them, but would rather play their own game by leveraging their unique ability and building things that are theirs that will help the kind of people that they you know, want to do that work with and for. This idea of encore living is the first half of life is all about external instruction and validation. Second half of life is about internal instruction and validation, knowing yourself, honing and leveraging your skills to live your legacy and to do meaningful work that you find fulfilling with and for people that you care about. So what I did with The Art of Encore Living is I took nine principles that have their foundations in ancient philosophical and spiritual traditions that are time-tested, but also scientifically vetted by positive psychology, neuroscience, and these sort of things. And in nine very short chapters have created kind of a nine steps that you can take to get clear about who you really are, what you're really good at, and where you really belong so that you can do work that matters with and for people that you care about so that you can find fulfillment, forge meaning, and make an impact with whatever time you have left. And so there is a PDF copy of the book available. As my give has lots of additional resources baked into it, links to broadcasts, podcasts, YouTube videos, and that sort of thing. So if anybody is intrigued by any of the ideas that we've just been talking about, you will find lots of resonance with the Art of Encore Living handbook.
Yeah, I've thoroughly enjoyed today's conversation, from like talking about decision making to system reliability to, you know, making good decisions. You know, there was a piece in there that we talked about, which was you can make a good decision with a bad outcome, and it still is a good decision. You can make a bad decision with a good outcome, and it's still a bad decision. So, you know, if you can picture this four quadrants right there: good decision, bad outcome, good decision, good outcome, and how you are viewed based off of what that outcome is, it still doesn't mean it was a good or bad decision. So I've enjoyed my time. I'm looking forward to sharing this out there. We have got Scott Perry with Creative On Purpose. Scott, thank you so much for the time that you spent with us today and for your give.
Appreciate it, Brandon. This has been a great conversation, and just always enjoy the time I get to spend with you, and hope this was helpful for other people.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks, Scott.